Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire with Mark Wilson.
As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at RL on RY. And Scully, you've brought us a guest, my friend.
I am indeed. A very good friend of mine, also too, as well. I'll have to admit it. He might not like this, but I'll admit it. He wasn't a bad rugby league player, I'll tell you. And a world record signing for a hooker or a forward back in the days. Quality hooker. Should have toured in 1988. Very, very unlucky not to be selected. Paul Grove just sneaked it, but for mine, it's Colin Maskell, and he was a bit better hooker than Grovesy.
OK. Colin, welcome along, pal. Having spent some time on the golf course with you, I know you're full of fun and tricks. It's an open house here. You can speak about what you want rugby league wise. Are you enjoying your rugby league season so far?
I certainly am. Obviously, with the work that I've done at Featherstone, that's changed slightly over the last couple of weeks. But I'm heavily involved with the kit suppliers ISC, so I'm always at a game from one week to another.
Okay. And Phil Kaplan is alongside us as always. Phil, you all right? Good, yes. Rugby league weekend.
We weren't talking enough about the rugby league, were we? It was all the extraneous stuff going on off the field with criticism of referees and coaches criticising owners. And was there any rugby played?
Yeah. There was, but it wasn't very good.
Oh, we'll see.
We did see one of the worst Super League games possibly in history between Catalan and Huddersfield on Saturday night, which is not to decry the result for Huddersfield, but... Did we get a complete set of six in that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I said to Matt yesterday, did he watch the game, and a few other guys as well, and do you know what? For whatever reason, I was watching the highlights today on the telly, and the commentators on there literally just making excuses because it was warm, the ball will be sweaty, the ball will be wet, that's why they can't catch the ball. Sorry, I'm not having it whatsoever. I'm not having it.
Exactly.
I'm just not having it. The excuses, because that game on Saturday, the passing and the catching was absolutely appalling. Huddersfield won't be too bothered about that. It's all a matter for them. We're getting the 2 points. They've got that and secured their top four spot.
Yeah, they have. Barring a disaster against the Wakefield Trinity Wildcats. Rich, who well beaten yesterday, a 15-minute spell either side of half time, destroyed them really.
Yeah, apparently, reading the forums last night and this morning...
Told you not to do that, Rich. Well, it's not good for your health.
It's all Rob Hicks' fault, apparently. He conceded 58 points, so congratulations to him for doing that. As I said on Twitter last night, and I've been saying for weeks, this is just pre-season. The real action starts in a couple of weeks, and Craig Murdoch, our guest last week, pulled me up on that and said that's what got James Webb to the sack. But I'm slightly more positive in my outlook.
I'll tell you what, you know, Rich, and that's a point where you're making there, because quite clearly, yesterday being at Wakefield, the fans couldn't care less that they were getting hammered by Castleford, that it was a local derby. They're exactly the same mindset as what you've got. It doesn't matter anymore now. It's a pre-season. Brian Smith, we discussed that, I think, 2 weeks ago, working out what his best team is, what his best combination. But Rich, do you not think that maybe cheating the fans a little bit?
Well, to an extent, but if they're not bothered, I guess why should anyone else be bothered? This is the flaw, isn't it, of the split, in the sense that Wakefield have had nothing to play for since, well, don't want to say round one, but since very early in the season, where, you know, up until this week, Salford winners still had a chance of making the top eight, whereas Wakefield have never had.
The most interesting comment of the weekend came on Thursday night. Neil Hudgill talking to the whole Daily Mail, saying that actually it might be better not to make the top eight because you'd just be treading water for seven games. He almost was saying it'd be better to be in the middle eight for Hull KR because they'll have meaningful matches. And again, you look at the crowds, you talk about what do the fans want. Do they want to go along and see Hull KR in that middle eight fighting for their life and turning up and supporting them, or do they want to go and see Hull or Catalan, who are going to be so far off the top four that they...
Well, I'll tell you what, the way they played on Friday night, Ulki, he won't want to be in the middle eight because they were awful. Well, Maskey, did you see it?
Yes, I did. And you've got to take your hat off to Hull. They played well after being on the pump early doors when Sean Lunt scored. They stuck to the task well. I thought Westerman and Watts really led them up front.
What if there was an England team pick now, Watts would be in it, wouldn't he?
It wouldn't be far off. He's shown some consistent form all year. Really consistent. And so has Joel. But going back to Wakefield, I think potentially that's a recipe for disaster. If you're just resting on your laurels and waiting for these middle eight.
Because I tell you what, Mask, as well, because I was going to put the question to you. We've been an ex-Wakefield player, and you know some of the guys who played for Wakefield years and years ago, and you've seen some of them performances. And obviously the comment from James Webster cost him his... cost him his job and obviously the performance of the players, but as an ex-Wakefield player, you must have been thinking at times, geez, have a bit of pride in the shirt, surely?
I don't think it's... You've played a long time, Gary, OK? And you've been in games and I've been alongside you. Do you remember the game, Wigan...
Oh, yeah.
In the Premiership, yeah, when the pump 70-odd against us, a fire scored 10 tries, OK?
I remember it all right, yeah, I came off after 54 minutes.
Yeah.
I think you're not blaming everyone else, are you?
Well, he will have done.
Were he 0-0 when you went off?
He were chasing a fire down the wing every time.
I was trying to stop Gene Miles, but it was impossible. But I tell you what, looking at that game, there's a funny from there because... Doug Lawn at half time, you know, as he did, you know, they were 36-0 up at half time, and his team talk were quite simple. If they could score 36 points, so could we in the second half. Anyway, I think they went about 56, 58, and they kicked a goal, and Gary Devoto sprinting to the halfway line. Come on! Come on! We're still in this game, and we all just went. Shut up, we all just walked behind. Literally, it's to slow the game down, because all it was, when we kicked off, to score the try, didn't they?
They just put two-pass shift into Gene Miles. Gene Miles pushed through whoever was in the centre and just hit the ball to a fire, and that was it. Ball over wall.
Was that Lee Mayer's nightmare?
Lee Deakin.
Lee Deakin.
Was one and only game?
Yeah,
he got brought. I think he got brought off after 18 minutes. I think the fire scored four tries.
Put up against the fire. And
he left Bentos out for him and put Deke in there. But that was one of the many stupid things what Dougie Lawton did. And I guess me and Colin could do quite an easy character assassination. We've been talking about this, but I've explained my distaste of that person who was in charge at Leeds Rhinos. Or Leeds were bleak in them days. Sometimes, Colin, I don't think you saw it to yourself, did you?
We've got to be very careful what we say.
Oh, no, we're not being defamatory, but we're just quite clearly, I didn't like him, and I know you didn't.
Well, there was one or two things that obviously went against the old regime when Dougie came in.
Yeah.
But what you've got to look at is the season before when we finished runners-up, OK? Mm. The side at that time under David Ward was probably one or two... Players, a decent side and really challenging. We finished runners up to Wigan after Wigan beat us probably 16-12 at Central Park one Wednesday night.
It was.
That was a championship decider. There must have been 30,000 at Central Park.
Yeah.
And I always blame Dicko because Dicko tried to offload in R22. I told him at golf last week.
I thought that were you, Waddell.
No, it was Dicko.
Was it a Wednesday or was it a Thursday? There was some strange night that it had to be played on, and television covered it. It was one of the early games of moving schedules about.
I thought it was definitely a Wednesday night.
Yeah, it was a Wednesday night. So
going back to that side, in my opinion, was only a couple of players short. Again, challenging for the title the following year.
Yeah.
But the regime at the time thought that we needed a managerial change. And that's when they brought in Dougie. And then it went pear-shaped for a number of individuals at the club.
Mm. 24 of them, actually. He'd have been 25 if he could have got shut me after a few months. But
he had a good go. I've witnessed to one or two little shenanigans.
He had a good go, don't worry about that. But and do you know what, as I said before, if he'd have been honest with me, Mask, you know, I'd have gone straight away because, and I say, I don't know if you know this, I think I've told you that, but after 2 weeks I went to go see Alf Davies, and realistically Alf shouldn't have brought him in the first place, and we all know what happened with Wardy and the late John Holmes and Paul Gilbert. But after the fortnight, I went to Alf Davies and, you know, to sack Doug Lawton because he wasn't any good for us. And, you know, it was quite clear. Well, they didn't see it quite clearly, but after 4 years' time, they did that. But, it wasn't a good time for us. But just me and Phil, we were discussing the other week, unfortunately, when Andy Hay lost his job, and we were discussing at Leeds, it's the way you play. And I've been at Featherstone a couple of times this year, as you know, and I think the way that Mark Campbell likes Featherstone to play, do you think the style of play in the end, maybe not because they're beating Bradford in there and then they got beat the weekend, do you think maybe the style of play in the end cost Andy his job, Mas, because you was there with him?
I wouldn't say the style of play cost him his job. Results cost him his job, full stop.
Hmm.
Okay, there was a number of performances, especially at home.
Halifax one was a shocker, wasn't it?
The Halifax and London, okay? Yeah. But what you've got to remember as well, the side was evolving. There was a lot of players came late, yeah? And there was a lot of players at the club that Andy hadn't brought to the club, OK? He tried to change things periodically, and tried to get the best out of what he had, all right? Some of those performances, and Andy will hold his hand up and say, you know, they weren't good enough. But, you know, they go to Bradford and beat Bradford, so, you know, you don't turn into a bad side overnight.
OK. I forgot where we were there. Scott just went off on a rant there.
I thought it was quite conservative with that conversation.
Well, I asked you a question about Wakefield and you ended up talking about Doug Lawton.
No, we were talking about Wakefield there.
I did ball boy once for a Wakefield Leeds feature when Lawton was the coach, I believe. That was good.
Did you fall out with him as well?
No, Nigel Wright hit a drop goal from the touchline last minute. We won 17-16. Great days.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah. Week after the Yorkshire Cup final, 1992.
There you go.
No, he remembers it. You might have been dropped. I don't know.
I might be suspended or something.
Well, that's why I'm suspended. That's why I'm Wakefield.
Well, were you ever suspended? You used to get done for cowardice if there were any boxing gloves.
No, I'm on about it. Lawton suspended me when I went for my ear operation.
You were probably playing in a World Cup.
No,
what did you get suspended for?
3 weeks
in
Stoggies.
And 10 days at Town Hall Tavern. You weren't far behind me. No, I got a serious ear infection in the swimming pool in Papin. You'll get in 90. Anyway, cut a long story short, it was a poison that was working its way through my ear thing. If I'd left it another 18 months, it would have killed me anyway. So, cut a long story short, I saw the physio, Seamus McKelly, and our doctor, Paul Langfear, and they didn't really know about it. So, I went to go see the ear specialist, Dr. Fraser, bless his soul, he's no longer with us. And he said, you know, I'll give you some drops. And they said, anyway, cut a long story short, went back to go see him about 4 or 5. He says, I need to have a look at this, I need to get in there. You know, so I went in as a day case, and then he said, right, I need you in as soon as possible when the season's finished. But the physio and the doctor didn't tell Doug Lawton what had gone on. He'd found out that I'd gone to see this ear specialist, got it sorted out because it was a problem myself, and suspended me for 2 weeks and fined me £300. Couldn't go to the club, couldn't train, couldn't speak to anybody. Oh, yeah. And then when I came back, he asked me to apologise. And you can know exactly the wording on that when he asked me to apologise. Oh, yeah. It was a battle for 4 years. It was an absolute battle. And Maskey, if he wants to, he could tell the story when he followed us down to the legend in Stoggies. He could tell the story if he wants. It's no skin off my nose. But it was fun to watch, Mask, wasn't it?
I don't think fun is the right way to describe it, especially when I'm driving and we go to Stoggies and then we go for a game of snooker after training in the afternoon, and then Dougie rocks up and gets stuck into him, and I'll leave it at that.
For four hours, yeah. He'd sacked me, I'd sacked him. He was this. I was like, for 4 hours. I think we got in there about 2:20, didn't we?
2:20. We were going to have a frame of snooker, a glass of pop, and then home.
Yeah.
4 hours later, I left car. I ended up having about 5 pints.
Yeah, it was a 4 hour. Yeah, I'd been sacked in a lot from the club, and then when I went back the next morning to tell Alf Davis, you know, the scenario, I just said, Scully, forget about it. We'll discuss it with him, and you know, don't worry. But oh, it was hatred between the pair of us. It was a good battle, actually. It was a good battle.
Who won?
Me, because I stayed, and he got the bullet, didn't he, when Dean Bell took over? Yeah, he realised he knew that Dean Bell was going to be far more professional than what he was used to, because you know the guys who he employed and what have you. And one of his assistant coaches, George Pianacek, I think he lasted 10 days, didn't he? He got all his kit, got all his tracksuits and training shoes, and left. Interesting.
You can read all about it in Scully's first ever book.
Yeah, very good. Colin, what was the highlight of your rugby league career playing?
From a playing perspective, I think initially was when I went to Australia and played with Valleys in 1984 in a fledgling career at Wakefield. I went out there and really enjoyed myself playing with Valleys. Then I came back and signed with Leeds. Obviously, we didn't win a lot of trophies, the Yorkshire Cup being the only one. But there were some highlights, some great games. I think the Regal Trophy semi-final when we beat Wigan at Bolton, I think it was something like 19-6. We lost Crooks after about 20 minutes. He went to decapitate Henderson Gill with like a flying elbow, missed him, hit the floor and dislocated his shoulder. But from there, that one I think stands out.
Okay. Good stuff. On Twitter, at RL on RY, I think Brian asked the question. He said, surely that Castleford Huddersfield game was the worst game earlier in the season. Cast lose something like 24-0 or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll be on the par with it. You know, why? I just feel at the moment in awful games of rugby.
Well, Darryl Powell actually made reference to it, didn't he? He said, look, we play a little bit differently. He said, we need to be, in some ways, a bit more like Huddersfield, grind out wins when it's a poor game or we're not quite on our game.
Yeah, but when you've got players who aren't coached that way and at times they don't want to play that way, it's hard to, you know, to get your players, those who want to pass the ball and show a little bit of skill. You know, it's pretty hard to stop that, isn't it? I would say.
And they'll have but one more games, which says something.
Yeah, well,
sort of won one more game than Huddersfield.
Yeah, but you could argue Huddersfield have lost less games.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's they're different, aren't they? The way they approach the games are different.
But what would you rather do, though? Would you rather lose playing attractive football, or would you rather win by grinding the result out? And I know every coach will say, because they stand and fall by results,
but they haven't won any trophies, have they? They won the League Leaders Shield.
They won the League Leaders. They're thereabouts, so they're not a million miles away, and I think they'll be the same this year. They'll be there at the business end.
I agree. And I think when we did
hold on. You're saying Castleford for the grand final. Just because Maskey's are here now, don't be getting me with Huddersfield. You said Castleford. No, didn't it?
I think you'll remember when we did the first last tackle.
Oh, so it's going to be Castleford now, is it?
When we did the first last tackle, it might have been even in this studio. You lot said Huddersfield won't make the top four.
Absolutely.
They still might not.
They might not.
Too many people think that the season stops next week.
Oh no, it doesn't. But I think this week we are going to find out that every minute does not matter, Rich, because the top four are sorted.
Are you talking about the top four after 30 games or 23 games? Is that what we're talking about here? After 30 games.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right.
So I've got seven games, so hang on. And actually, I think Cass will pip him to it, but we'll go on that in a minute.
Well, the thing is, they play each other, don't they? So that'll determine it. The good thing about the top eight is you will play those teams that are.
Well, it might not determine it. There's a lot of big games in there as well, isn't there?
But it could.
Well, this is where I'm confused by those comments about wanting to be in the top eight, middle eight rather than the top eight, because if you're in the top eight, you can plan for next season already. If you're one of those teams at the bottom end, you've got a head start on the bottom four in terms of making your signings for next season, which...
Well, you've got £1.8 million guaranteed.
Exactly.
If you're in Super League, you don't want to be in that middle eight, full stop.
Yeah,
if you can get away with it.
Exactly.
Because there's always that danger of your form dipping and dropping out of Super League. I don't care what you say. Survival is paramount.
I'm at the point about Old KR. If they play like they did the other night... Mm. They'll struggle for me. As attractive as they are at times.
So we've got this top eight after this weekend, right? And so then the fixtures, is it the top four, do they play at home first in round 25?
We don't know the distribution of the fixtures, but they've got four home games. You would think they would have to start.
So they've got the four home games.
Home away.
But the top four will have, so the top four, so is it first place eighth? Second place, seventh, or we don't know yet.
We know who they're playing.
Right.
We don't know the dates of the games. They need to be. I think they've got to take into account grounds that are going to be available with teams that share with football.
Which nights
Sky want to film games on?
Right.
If there's an hour in the month.
Yeah.
Whether it rains on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Before they can give us all the fixtures.
Okay. Well, they are doing a launch a week on Wednesday.
Yeah, there's going to be a big launch.
There's always.
Surely, again, you know, have a launch, but why wait till Wednesday? That's another 3 days lost before you can put tickets on sale. Surely they should come out Sunday night next week.
Yeah. Well, you would think so.
There's three teams going to Catalan that are going to get very, very short. Yeah.
I tell you what as well. We're talking about that, but just last week, I put on my Twitter site. I don't know if anybody saw it. It was on Sky Sports News last week. Did you see the OKR player? I'm going to ask Maskey about this because he's been involved with Cass, Wakefield, and Feversham over a few years now, and into being pampered, and the players were getting massages and all this sort of thing. And I put on my Twitter site, good ones don't need it, and bad ones aren't worth it. And I got a little bit of slag off on it. Go, you're a dinosaur, you're an old timer, of course the players need it. And I don't think
but that was just what Rich put. What did everyone else put?
But Mask, you know, as I mentioned yourself, you know, he was a very, very good player. And you look at the way that players are pampered, and you've seen it now over the last few years with Teddy Matt. I said you've been with Teddy Matt, I said at Cass and at America, you've been with Wakefield, obviously, at Feversham, even at that level. You know, they get with a pampered in the psychology and the dietitians. Do you think at times it goes overboard a little bit? Would it have benefited you as a player as well, do you think?
I wouldn't have minded a little massage every now and again.
Well, hold on, we're on about Sunday afternoon here.
Gary, the full-time players, right, training day in, day out. The game's changed now, right? The game is much faster than when we played it, right? This is my opinion. You can pull your face as much as you want. The players need as much time for rehab as they possibly can get, okay? And if that includes massages, ice baths, these cryogenetically chambers that they go in, all well and good. It's all about the individual. What does the individual like doing, and how do they feel after that? You've got to try and keep them fresh, especially this time of year, right? You know, you can't get any real conditioning into the players at this time of year. It's keeping them fresh and making sure that come game day they're as fresh as they possibly can. Okay, if it includes a little half hour massage here or there, so be it. Even the referees are getting it now, aren't they? Or they were until they got finished.
How long did it take you to get over a game?
He never got tattled.
Well, this is Scotty who played three games in three days.
I could play easy Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday. It's not a problem for me.
The reason I ask is because I was speaking to Jamie Peacock after the game against Wigan the week before last.
Well, Phil, I'm not the right person to be asking about him,
Jamie,
really.
It took 5 days for him to be able to walk after that game.
Exactly.
Like 80 minutes.
The game has changed.
41 tackles, 22 carries, whatever. 5 days before he could walk.
Is that what they get paid to do, though?
Well, Gary,
so did Kevin Ward. So did Colin Masker. You made those. Isn't that what they get paid to do?
Yeah, but do you remember Crooks? Crooks used to sit in that old tin bath at Cass in his wrestling pants, full of ice. He was the first person I've ever seen in an ice bath.
Yeah, because he had a pack of 24 inside him, that's why.
He needed tail levers to get him out of that tin
bath.
Yeah,
he had a pack of 24 inside him.
But if Lee hadn't have done that, he'd have struggled to play week in, week out.
Yeah,
you was. Never played it middle. You played loose forward and played at edge and never did any of the hard stuff at middle.
Well, I want that to do that.
Hold on, what were you paid for? You had 13 on your back.
Creativity. Dave, I don't learn with that. Don't worry about that. 13 you create. Don't worry about that, son.
Yeah, but there's a time and a place for doing some hard stuff.
No, the donkeys were there to do that. You know that
exactly.
Yourself, Colin.
The donkeys need additional rehab, you give them it. They're doing all the donkey work. They're doing all the hard work at middle to get you on the front foot
so you can play. But hey, let's not forget as well, in today's game, in our days, there was only two subs. Today, there was 12, and now there's 10. They're off after 20 minutes. They sat down for 25, back on for 15.
The game's changed. The game is a lot quicker.
I'll tell you an example here. Yesterday, then, when we said Darryl needs to keep his best players on the field all the time, I'll tell you what, when he kept Andy Lynch on and when he kept Millington on for that hour, 65 minutes, they were outstanding. And let me just say this, Lynchy and Millington didn't want to come off, did they, mate?
Right, yeah.
They didn't want to come off.
But they were playing on the front foot, and you talk about momentum and possession, right? If you're not defending, you've got the ball all the time, it's easy to attack, so your front rowers are fresh. Put it on the flip side and ask Wakefield, what were their front rowers like when Wakefield were continually keeping possession?
But at times, though, that's Wakefield's fault, isn't it? Because if they're dropping the ball at second and third tackle, it's their own fault, isn't it?
At the end of the day.
But anyway, I'm just asking the opinion. You would be all for it, but as I say, I just think it's overhyped and I think it's overpampered.
You give the option to the players. You give the option to the players. If they want it, they'll take it. If not, they'll not.
I'm just saying, Richard just pulled up a fantastic try that Colin scored.
Burden Park.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, under the 80s.
Slippery Steve Morris, Gary Schofield, and Colin Masker.
Around Kevin Arrow.
Did it make you feel old, though? Slippery Steve Morris, and we're watching his kids playing for Australia.
What do you mean, Phil? It makes you feel old. Hey, we can remember him arriving slippery with the twins.
With the two boys.
The funny story about that is that he only had one house key, so when he come out, he had to lock everybody at house. He only had one house key to house. So Slippery came training, he's got house key.
Yeah, then he went in Stoggers and Town Hall for 3 days. Family couldn't get out. We introduced him to our team spirit.
Are you saying there was a drinking culture at Leeds?
Oh, it was steady, to be honest with you. We didn't go mad. There was
a time and a place.
Absolutely.
There was a time
we didn't
place.
Go mad.
Yeah,
we'd...
the place was Stoggers and the Town Hall Tavern. Yeah. The town was all day, everything.
Yeah, after
no,
training.
No, it was...
What do we think, then? I mean, obviously, we... This middle eight now, we know who's going to be in it. The question is, are one of those championship sides, Lee, Bradford, Sheffield or Halifax, going to make Super League? Scoy.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, I saw from Wakefield yesterday, and me and Phil's had a bit of a debate about this a couple of weeks ago. I think, you know, the influence what Brian Smith has had, or has it been that influential? It has, for what I saw yesterday. Not just because the players, you know, seem to want to play for the coach, but I think with the structure what they're playing, it's quite evident that it's, you know, it's that Australian style there, where it's just the one-up stuff there. We're not playing anything too smart. Playing off a good kicker game with Tim Smith. Then when they get themselves in the right field position, then I'll tell you what, Tim Smith, some of his passing is sensational. He's just memorising at times there. So what I've seen for Wakefield, and okay, you see they got 58 points against him, but for that time where there wasn't control what they was playing for 15 minutes in the first half and maybe again another 15 minutes in the second half, showed me and told me enough with the quality what they've got, then I don't think Wakefield will have a problem by not being in Super League next year. So, but I do believe that Lee will get promoted as well, so I think it could be that last game to get promoted. Salford are in dire straits. I think it could be Salford Halifax for to see
you put
for
Halifax
Super League
above Bradford.
Yeah, I would because you keep Lee Gaskell quiet for mine. They're a one man team.
So if Halifax and Salford are going to play in the fourth, and
the fourth,
fifth,
the fourth and fifth, yeah.
So who's going to be the three? Who'll go?
Lee Witness and Wakefield. Salford and Halifax to stay.
No, because if Lee go up, one gets relegated.
That's
okay,
relegated already, or
whoever.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that formula works. Well, I'll tell you what then, Salford, the way they play, it could be Halifax and Oakish and Rovers, and then Salford are relegated.
There's eight teams in the comp, right? So
two and three automatically go into
Super League.
Right, I've got
four
that.
And five playoff.
Right.
Every game potentially is a cup tie. Okay?
It is.
Every game is a cup tie. So it's like knockout football.
Yeah, I've got it now. Yeah. So okay. So it could be.
I'll tell you who's in danger because of the semi final. Hull KR. If we assume that they're not gonna beat St Helens, or that if they do, Catalan even lose at Leeds, but the points difference is doesn't swing enough. It looks as though Hull KR are going to be in the middle eight. There's a tenuous link they've still got to still make the top eight. Everybody then has a week off and decides exactly how they're going to approach this middle eight, bearing in mind that nobody's played in it before. The fixtures will be coming out on the Wednesday. You don't have a lot of time to prepare. Hull KR are playing in a cup semi-final that weekend. They will either have got to Wembley and we'll have a focus on that, which is halfway through this middle eight, or they won't. And they've got to go from losing a semi-final into coming up with at least four big games in the middle eight. They suddenly become a little bit vulnerable. A little bit more vulnerable than they were a couple of weeks ago, I think. Salford have got the players, but they don't seem to have any spirit. I haven't seen a more demoralised bunch for a very long time. That was a game we just shouldn't have seen at Headingley. You know,
can I make an observation about Salford? There's a lot of players want to leave,
yeah.
So we're led to believe. There's a lot of players already leaving, so we're led to believe. If Salford get relegated out of Super League, all those players become free agents.
Well,
so if they don't want to be there, and you've got a club lined up, you're not going to be bothered what happens, are you?
I'll tell you what, on Friday night, they weren't bothered. No, and they didn't look fit to me. But I'll tell you what was surprising and quite astonishing to me, Phil, on Friday night, was even the Leeds fans were leaving with 25 minutes. So, of course, they're cheering enough. Leeds fans were leaving.
That's fine. If you want to watch, you know, fantastically crafted attacking rugby, that's fine. But you can have too much of a good thing.
I agree.
We were told under the new era that we wouldn't get games like that.
Well, where's that performance come from? Because they battered Hull KR the week before. I'm asking you, what do you think?
It's a tough gig. There's obviously a lot of things going on behind the scenes that you hear rumours, you know, and things knocking about. But there's obviously issues at the club, all right? If it's to do with the owner, or if it's to do with the players wanting to leave, regardless, okay? It's a volatile mixture. It's a volatile mixture that in the game on Friday, once they went behind, they threw the towel in, okay? But we've still got to look, for me, in relation to the Super League clubs play at high intensity.
They do.
Okay?
They do.
And for me, that will stand them in good stead when it comes to these middle eights, okay? Lee and Bradford, for me, in my opinion, are the two clubs out of the four who can sustain that intensity for long periods over 3, 4, 5 games. So for me, Bradford and Lee will have a major say in that. In that,
but the first thing they've got to do is fight amongst themselves who's going to be the leading championship team.
But is
depending it, Rich, how, when well, is that game going to be played?
Is that
going to be
part
one
of the problem,
games?
Rich? Are the championship teams going to do themselves in, try to beat each other, and then not have anything left to win a game against a Super League team?
Well, possibly. Are we completely writing Halifax and Sheffield off a chance of being promoted?
Yes.
I don't think they can sustain the intensity
for seven weeks.
For seven weeks, I think they're capable of winning the odd game against Super League opposition. I just don't think they can do it.
I think
long periods.
They have achieved this year because we don't know what the distributions are going to be, but we think that the top four now confirmed in the championship will be getting round about £450,000 next year. Now, if that's true, Sheffield got 175 last year and have over-exceeded, and Halifax got about 250,000. So both of those clubs know that next year they can be stronger. Mm-hmm. They can go out and recruit now. They can possibly touch full-time in the way that Bradford and Lee have done. That's the amount of money that they took on board to go full-time. They can look at the players that are available, but they've actually achieved. They don't need to do anything in this eight in terms of the fact that actually it could harm them if they got promoted. If they suddenly went from 175,000 to 1.8 million at very short notice, that's unsustainable. What you want is planned growth. And both of those clubs now have got in a position where they're the exact reverse of London and Featherstone, who are going to be reliant next year on their owners putting in that gap in money if their owners want to do it. So I think I wouldn't rule out the fact that they'll win games, but actually they've overachieved. They don't need to win this competition.
Saying that they've overachieved is a tough gig. Because both clubs have got aspirations to become Super League clubs, okay? But whether or not it's in 12 months, yes. 3 or a 5 year plan, they're both quality clubs, yep. Good sides, well coached, okay? And that will play a part in the, you know, and the
and they can
really
have some fun. Oh. They could upset a Super League team by getting them on the wrong day at the wrong time and beating them, and it might not mean that Halifax or Sheffield go, but it could mean that Super League team is in dire straits if they lose that game.
I'll tell you what as well, though, we're talking about the Halifax and Sheffield from there, but I guess just, again I'd like to just touch on the Salford point and certainly what Brian McDermott said, and I think he's got to be applauded for being open and honest, and I think the majority of people, 95% of us, we've had enough of all the Salford rubbish. It's all boring now, it's all news, but after that performance on Friday night, it's nice that somebody who's heavily involved in the game, and he has coached some of them players and knows them personally, i.e. as he mentioned Wella Hierarchy, and also too with Adrian Morley. But a question I'd like to put out is, now Salford are in dire straits and looking for a win, where that win's going to come from nobody knows, will Rangi Chase play for Salford again, do we think?
Why won't he? Why are you asking that question?
Because he's not been selected for the last 2 or 3 games. Has there been a huge fallout again with the owner? Or does Tim Sheens not fancy him? Why is it Rangi Chase? Because he's their best player.
Well,
why
really
is it Rangi Chase
interesting
playing?
Interesting week this week. Because by Friday, you've got to have firmed up your squad for the eights. So there's an issue about players that are on dual registration not being able to play. But there's also another issue that if you want to change your squad, like Wakefield have been doing, you've got to have done it by Friday. So if Rangi Chase is going to move, he's got to do it by Friday, I think.
I don't think he'll move, but what I'm saying is, will Rangi Chase play again for Salford this season?
If they've got aspirations of staying in Super League,
they have to do
play
it, don't they?
Where's his best position? Where at the moment? I mean, they say that Farge and Dobson are their preferred halfbacks.
Oh, Phil, Michael Dobson on Friday night, I tell you what, you could have played better.
Well,
he was useless.
Wasn't quite that,
oh, I'm telling you, he was absolutely useless.
We've just got Michael Dobson on the phone.
Where does Rangi play?
We've got to play him at six, haven't you? Second man out, and that's where he causes all his trouble.
You can play him on either edge because
yeah, you play him. Yeah, give him a free roll.
Yeah.
But the question is, will Rangi Chase play again for Salford?
What if another club comes in for Rangi Chase this week?
Just a second.
They're going to have to pay a lot of money.
Yeah, they are. But go back to Rangi. Any halfback worth his salt, and you're the same, and you were the same, Gary, can only play if you're on the front foot, right? So he needs everybody up front doing the hard yards, getting on the front foot, so he's got time on the ball to play, okay? And then options on the fringe. Okay, if you're not playing on the front four, it's hard to play. You can't play. Okay, so it's not just Rangi, right? You've got to look at what's happening in front of him and getting on the front foot and playing, getting into good ball. He's proved this year that he can open up any side. That score, I can't remember who it was against when he flicked it round his back. No one else could have done that.
No, Colin. No, what I'm saying is, we've been a halfback because I couldn't. Well, you know, he said I didn't play behind the best back of forwards at times in my playing days. But what I'm saying is, Rangi Chase as the rugby league player should be starting out in the Salford side, shouldn't he? Mm-hmm. You know, and again, my question, you know, do Salford fans though? Can they get in contact? or do they know any reason why he's not being selected? Is he injured? You know,
they said he had a back injury on.
Is that what they're saying
on Friday night?
But
I think there's a selection issue that Evans is playing too well at fullback. He deserves his place.
Also, again, another scenario. What's happening with Yessin Ellis? You know, are the players asking the question? Is he coming back? Is he not coming back? Do the players know what the scenario is there? Or is it just Dr. Kulkash who knows that? Is it Tim Sheens? Because I put out on Friday night, if I were Tim Sheens, I'd be on the next plane to Australia on a one-way ticket. Why would you want to be involved in that trash?
I think Brian McDermott's tirade, which was unexpected, came on the back of what's happening with Yessin. I think whether you think he's a good coach or not, I think Brian McDermott is part of this coaching fraternity.
I agree.
This is not right.
Correct.
There were five ex-Leeds players in the Salford ranks, and I know he keeps in contact with quite a few of them. Ben Jones Bishop's one of them. I know that. Again, he's still very highly thought of at Leeds, and Craig Harrison, his agent, obviously is agent of a lot of Leeds players, so they know what's going on at Salford. We might hear the odd rumour, but they actually know. Richard Hunwicks, who's the strength and conditioning guy, was at Leeds last year. So every facet of that Salford organisation, the people in the game know about, and there's something wrong. And it's taken Brian McDermott to stand up and say this isn't right on the basis of the fact that he cares passionately about the sport and the way people are treated. And I think the most telling thing he said wasn't necessarily just to have a go at Marwan Kukash. It was about what do you determine leadership to be? Well, you're talking about a guy who's an ex-Marine. The whole culture around what Leeds have done over the last few years under Brian McDermott is built around team spirit, teamwork, working together, shutting out the outside world. And I think he feels that you're never going to be successful unless that is part
but
of what
do, but
do.
Do we have to have sympathy for Yessin Harris? So without being rude, it's like taking the manager's job at Leeds United. You go to work for essentially an eccentric, I'll put it kindly. You don't know exactly what you're going into.
It's not that. It's the fact that his name is not mentioned. For the last 3 weeks, he may as well have...
You're going to work, though, for a man who's got no respect for the game. He doesn't know the game.
I think Brian McDermott is saying that the way Marwan Kukash has behaved is disrespectful to some people within his organisation. And I think that's a debate worth having. There's a lot of people that think that Brian McDermott shouldn't have said anything. It's nothing to do with him. But I think there's a wider question about it.
Scully, if you were a player, Colin, if you were a player now, would you go play at Salford?
If you contracted, you'd have to play, right?
No, but if Salford rang you up now, Colin Maskell, 30 years old, you want to come and play at Salford? No. We'll offer you all the money in the world.
That's a no, because you know what's happening behind the scenes. A lot of the players in the current regime across Super League know what's going on behind the scenes. Okay? Players talk, okay? So they know exactly what's going on. It's just not in the public domain at the moment. Okay?
But again, when we, you know,
we're all dancing around the issue.
But what I'm saying, the elephant really, is Mr. Kukash. That elephant is Mr. Kukash, and that comment when he made that big press statement, was it 3 or 4 weeks ago? Because let's not forget here, he has created this culture, right? And then it comes out with the huge sayings is, "I want players who want to play for Salford. We passion and commitment, and they want to wear that Salford shirt." Is that right, is it? And then secondly, I don't want players here who are just money grabbers, big egos, and think the marquee signings. Mr. Kukash, you've caused it all yourself. You have caused this, as Colin Maskell has said, there's a big elephant somewhere. You're that big elephant with a big trunk, doing all the noises, pulling all the strings. I'm afraid to say, son, you've only got yourself to blame for this mess what you're in.
Rich?
Eventually, it was always going to take someone to put the head above the parapet. I've said this already this week, and it was Brian McDermott who's done it. It's going to be interesting to see now how many people continue to make comments about Salford.
I tell you one thing for sure. Nobody said to Matt Dermott he should have kept his nose out of everybody else's head, because we're all right.
Not within the game.
Because we care about the game. But we care about the game, don't we? You know, we've all been in the game for many, many years. We care about the game.
I just think there's a credibility issue. I think there were a lot of people, myself included, that were enthused by Dr. Kukoc when he came on the scene. He made some promises. He had a vision for the sport. He came in here for 2 hours. It was the most engaging company when he first arrived. He was open to new ideas. He was talking about how passionate he was about the game, and he couldn't understand why it wasn't marketed better. I think other chairmen bought into that and thought, oh, there's a breath of fresh air. There's going to be somebody who'll stand up to the governing body. We might want to get behind him. They've now all withdrawn because there hasn't been any delivery. There was a promised stadium for Swinton. It's not arrived. There were some players who were sold a dream that wasn't there. The fans were told they had to turn up to watch what. At some point, you know, we were going to have the Dubai Nines. We were going to have him buying Newcastle Knights or Gold Coast Knights. None of the things he's talked about have happened. So at some point, there's a lack of credibility there. You've got to deliver.
There's only a lack of credibility within his expertise of rugby league. Okay?
I would question that now.
Right, yeah, but you put the flip side, look at his horse racing expertise and what he does in that sport. Okay? He's at the top. Okay, he's got however many horses in training, top training, he's running them all over the world. Okay? So he's credible in that side of his business. Unfortunately, in rugby league, he's not had the expertise and the knowledge given him as an assistant. Could he have done with somebody as an advisor?
But he's not prepared to take advice, O'Connor, is he?
But I would say he did have with Brian, somebody like Brian Noble. You know, as experienced and knowledgeable as you could want.
And he brought Nobby himself. He sacked Phil Vivas after, what, four or five games. But does he want to listen to people who...
He's had Tim Sheens... I mean, I saw Tim Sheens briefly after the game, just in the corridor, not particularly to speak to. Ian Watson came into a press conference like, you know, a rabbit in the headlights. So what could he say after a performance like that? And Tim Sheens handed him the stats. You know, and I'm thinking, you brought this guy over from Australia. What role has he got? You know, he's wearing jeans. He's got all the stats after the game, and he's handing them to.
Can I ask a question?
You say his credibility is a rugby league one. I would argue there are players have come out and said that they haven't been paid.
Yep.
They would not say that if that wasn't the truth. And if it's not the truth, why has Dr. Kukoc not said, that is not the truth, and I'm going to sue you for libel for saying it? I'm going to sue you for saying it. That's not happened. That says to me, the money's not there. People are starting to see holes in what's happening. And therefore, for me, I said this to you before, I said it on this show, for me, he was planning on walking away when he opened the gates for free. I think he hoped no one would go, and he could say, what's the point? I'm spending all this money, no one's bothered. Marwan, if you'd have asked anyone in rugby league to buy a rugby league club, Salford would have probably been bottom of the list.
Yeah.
But I think he's done. I think he's done. I think he's had his bluff called, and I don't think he's got the cards.
Yeah, I guess, you could say. But the point there, what Phil just made, with Tim Sheens, with Ian Watson, who's a standing coach now, and, you know, Tim, as we all know, quality coach, was he won the Grand Final 4 times, something, Australian coach winning the World Cup, and he's come over here as director of rugby. And after Friday night's performance, and somebody of that experience, and if I was Watson and Tim Sheens gave me the stats, I'll tell you what I would have done. I'd have told him to stick him as far as he could. As far as he could find him, say, I don't need any stats to see what rubbish I've just watched out there. You know, so what role is he really playing? Eh? What role is he really playing?
We'll discuss the role. But again, Yeston's disappeared, Tim Sheens has arrived. In any other organisation, that would be disrespectful. A man's in a job, suddenly disappears, he's not mentioned on any press release. There's no talk about where he is other than he's in inverted commas ill. We don't, you know. I know that he has had some health problems, but not that would take him away from the job. But you can't just bring in people from the other side of the world and give them an unspecified role and then ignore the fact you've got a coach.
The only person who can clear this up is Marwan himself.
Correct.
He needs to come out
and not swear.
Well, he can swear as much as he wants, as far as I'm concerned.
But to be honest with you,
if he clears it all up. But you've also got to look at where the stadium is. There's a number of contributory factors that are really adding into the melting pot that is Salford. Mm. They're not getting the crowds because the stadium is out on a limb. The transport links are rubbish to get there, right? The stadium's just
you can't get out.
But also at the end of the day, right? Mr. Kukas will not listen. There's plenty of people who want to give him advice. But if anybody makes a comment regarding, as we know, what Brian said on Friday night, which was absolutely correct, he just tells everybody to mind their own business. There's nothing wrong. Well, I'm afraid there is.
As much as I may worry about what would happen to Michael if they were relegated, I'd be worried more if I were a Salford fan. Because what will happen to them in the Championship?
On paper, that was no way a team that should have conceded 70.
No, of course not.
I refer back to my opening gambit. Yeah. If they get relegated, they can all go play somewhere else.
What if you lose 18-0 at Warrington and you go, on budget, on paper, it shouldn't be 18-0, but you can see why. And actually, it was a good thing in the end because it caused the chain of events which has led to Brian Smith in charge and the Pillays coming in, so on and so forth. But something's going to happen. Someone's going to say something soon, and it will all come
out.
Well,
it may well be that a player's even denied the chance to move, who then turns around and says, well, actually, my contract's now null and void because you haven't done X, Y and Z. So, you know, Ramsey could move this week.
Well, it'll be a player who has nothing to lose, who comes out and spills the beans.
Okay, somebody knows that they'll get a deal
elsewhere. Or somebody who's going
to
retire.
Tony Pulitua nearly did it, didn't he? Yeah. He's gone to Hull KR, he retires at the end of this season. There's an issue that he's going through the courts at the moment. He's probably been told because it's going through the courts, don't say anything. But once he's retired...
Absolutely. Yeah. But also, we'll look at a player here who's going to retire in the season, in Adrian Morley. And by allegedly, Adrian is going to stay on as an ambassador or in the marketing department at Salford. How the hell can you market Salford? You know, Adrian looked an absolutely dejected figure being part of that. And it was very, very sad to see. And that's because, you know, the tribute I paid him today in my column in the League Express of what a quality rugby league players and a good person as well, Adrian is. You know, when you saw him on Friday night.
Well, there's a wonderful video tribute to him on the screen at the end of the game on Friday night. He didn't even know it was being done. He was in the dressing room when it was on. Yeah. And the ground was empty. This fantastic 5-minute tries that he scored while he was at Leeds, and we forget how good a young second rower he was, not the proper he is now. A wonderful montage of him growing up before he went off to the Roosters, and nobody saw it, which was criminal. He honestly didn't. I mentioned to him afterwards, he said I didn't even know it was on there.
I'll tell you what, they were looking not to be sent off, weren't they? When he belted Robbie Burrell.
But he's not been. Again, I know we talk a lot about this.
And the kick out as well, when they kicked out in the tackle, he won't.
No charges.
All right, interesting.
Dick O'Carter have been watching.
No, well, Dick must have been busy.
How he's on discipline, I'll never know.
But this is the match review panel deemed nothing.
Well, let us know at RL on our Y. I know Salford are not on our patch, but it's a big story waiting to burst, isn't it? And it's a potential embarrassment for the rugby league, I think, this one.
Again, the problem is that after that game, that was the news. It wasn't about what Leeds may have done. It wasn't about 13 glorious tries. We have had some headlines this week. We had Neil Hudgill on Thursday questioning the value of where you finished in the league. We had Brian McDermott and Dr. Kukash on Friday. We had Bernard Gouache putting on his barbecue Joe Cobb on Saturday night. We haven't got any stories that are about rugby this week.
No.
Well, I guess the big story. No, gone. No, Justin Carney for England because he scored 4 tries, but his defence is suspect.
Oh, please!
I'm not saying.
I'll tell you what, though. That jab he offers at the player, the ball.
I'll tell you what, Mas, were you at Cass with Carney with Matteson? Well, Carney there.
Carney came late.
I tell you what, you know, because we saw it again. You see, we know what it's like when he gets tackled and whatever. You don't think he can be people.
You won't want to be stood in front of him when he's coming.
When he gets tackled after he's been tackled and played the ball, it belches you as if to say, "What are you doing tackling me? I just want to score a try." You're allowed to tackle people.
Masky, three
times
straight on the jaw.
Three times,
you know, but not sighted. That's what I'm saying.
Darryl says, take it out of his game. You're taking away from his game, Colin. What do you make of him?
I'll tell you what. I'm glad I used to play at middle. That's all I'll say.
You had it easy at middle when you got big blokes like that.
Huh? No, but hey, I'll tell you what. you've got to give credit to the centre as well, putting him into space. And he's a quality winger, out and out. You look at the size of him, he's just solid. And all his attributes make him one of the best wingers in the game. Okay, yeah, he's got that little bit of an edge on him, but so what? As long as he doesn't overstep the mark, Darrell will let him do whatever he wants to do. If he's scoring four and five tries every week, carry on.
But he conceded a couple of penalties yesterday, Colin. In a big game, that could well be the decider, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could. It's a fine balance. It's a fine line. And it's a fine line for all the top players. Yeah, and it's only when they overstep the mark that the issue raises its head. Mm. If they just keep simmering, just under that threshold, everything's fine.
It goes back to what you were saying about preparation as well and how the game's changed. You wouldn't have found a winger of that size in... I mean, I know Jim Fallon was a big
Eric Groff wasn't bad.
Oh, Eric
but
was,
exceptions.
Yeah. Marmalade and Jim Miles wasn't bad.
Now, but they weren't... Now, every club has players that would have been second rowers in your day playing in the three quarters. That's how the game's changed.
Yeah, it is. And for me, it's only improved the game. Mm-hmm. You know, across the park.
Yeah, anyway, just talking about, I guess, we're talking about pre-match and psychology. A question somebody asked me to ask you, Colin, did you, your pre-match?
Oh, no, this sounds a bit suspect.
Your pre-match, was it a peppered steak, I'm led to believe, for a pre-match?
No, never a peppered steak, because you know...
Allegedly,
fact,
you liked your peppered steaks.
I did, I didn't mind a steak on a Saturday evening, never
was
a
peppered?
All the time.
Right,
that was. It's one of my favourite meals, is
fair
that.
Fair play, mine was beans on toast.
But I could never have it on the morning of a game, because you know, I used to be ill before a game, I used to be shocking with nerves. And I'd be sick as a dog, and I mean sick as a dog, before every game. I was that nervous. Awful.
Wimp. I tell you what though, he's a bit like Dicko. Dicko with the knees, Paul Dixon. We'll get Dicko in a few weeks' time as well, but Maskey was super with the elbows. He just shows an operation what he's had. I've got a burst on my elbow. Mine just because my elbow's in the car lying down, but Maskey's, yeah, you're having some of this. He was a beauty. I once had to rag off Jeff Hardy down at Castle Weldon Road, beating him up and went because he didn't mind the old cheap shots in home mask. John O'Neill at St. Helens. They used to eat your elbow, was it?
No, I did steady with knees, didn't I? I dropped on him, my old mate, Nick, steady, and then all hell brought loose.
Yeah. He wasn't bad with the elbow, the old lad. He was good, though. He was good. Well,
that's old school, where when you passed, you used to have to just put your elbow up, because you knew you were going to get a crack from old school.
Yeah, but what about when they had ball?
And it's what?
When they had ball?
Never.
John Neil used to love you.
Mm, yeah, well, I never got suspended for it anyway.
He, at times, you had to have a stepladder to get him to swim with players.
Paul Moriarty. Poor Huey Waddell got his jaw broke.
Tell when Moriarty did Huey Waddell with elbow.
Paul Moriarty come charging through. We were playing Widnes at Headingley, and it was a poor tackle technique by me, and he ducked, and I caught him with the elbow as we were going down, and it broke his nose. But Huey Waddell was in the tackle, and as we're getting up, I tapped Huey and just said, "Great tackle, Huey." So Paul Moriarty thought it was Huey. Next thing, we get a penalty. Huey Waddell comes charging onto the ball. Paul Moriarty just dived at him, smacked him with the elbow, broke his cheekbone. He just walked off. I saw him in Cardiff a few years back, and I thought he was going to chin me. Paul, he just came up and gave me a big hug. He says, "Look at my nose." He says, "It's never been the same since you hit me."
Oh dear. Mm. All fun and games, Scoia.
Oh yeah, it was good to watch it. I never used to get involved in all that. No, too tough for me.
Yeah. Was he soft, Scoia?
Too tough for me. Yeah.
Was.
Yeah, very. Very. You used to keep out at work.
Yeah.
If anything happened, he'd go hug one at lads who used to know
it. I called it being smart.
He'd go find a fullback.
Yeah. Dance someone with little that could cuddle.
He was like being on dance floor in Stoggies.
Oh, aye.
Rugby League on Radio Yorkshire at RL on RY.